Here's Bill and Cornell, and like whichever one you want to start. Start. You get the hot seat.
Hi, my name's Cornell, and I'm an addict. And it's good to be at the convention. It's kind of asked to do this at the last minute by a dear friend of mine, person in my network. So I kind of had to say yes. And the topic is services at home, too. And I'm thinking, well, why would he ask me to do a topic like that? But they told me if somebody asks you to do something in this program, you ought to say yes if you can, you know, if it's possible. So I've tried to. And I've certainly been involved in service a lot in NA. My clean date is March the 5th, 1992. And since that date, I haven't found it necessary to use. And it's because of service. And the service work at home, too, has been amplified in my life through a lot of my sponsees and people in my network. I have several sponsees who actually do things at home that I wish I could do, you know, or had it done. I've been clean for 16 years, going on 17, but I've been divorced for 13. And so obviously I wasn't doing enough service work at my house. So maybe that's why I'm forced into this thing. But I get that opportunity again, I think I'll know what to do. But service work comes in all forms, and I was just sitting there kind of reflecting. You know, I had about 20 minutes or so to kind of think of how, you know, some of the service work that I do at home that maybe somebody could relate to. And one of the things that stuck out for me was about three years ago now, my mom was diagnosed with cancer. She had a cancerous spot on her lung. And, you know, it was pretty devastating. And this program has taught me to try and live in the solution. And the first doctor that we talked to said that, you know, mom was in her 70s and that she had a bad heart and that she wouldn't survive the surgery and there was nothing they could do. She wasn't strong enough for chemo. And I was shared with a few people in my network about what was going on, and I had gathered enough tools after being around for a while to say, hey, we need to get another opinion. You know, we ain't giving up on this thing. And I talked with my brother and my sister, you know, it's just three siblings, and we got another opinion. And when we got the second opinion, we talked with this other doctor at GW Hospital, and he said that they had a robotic surgery that they could do, which would only involve three small incisions, not much bigger than my finger, where they sent in a camera and two small probes, and they could remove this mass that was on her lung. And we talked mom into having that surgery, and it was a success. And what stuck out to me about the service part of that is that during that process, mom was in the hospital for like 8 days, and she didn't want us to go home. She wanted somebody in the family to be there. And I have a brother and a sister, older brother and a younger sister, and I was doing the bulk of the time at the hospital, staying with mom, spending the night. You know, my brother would come late and leave early. And, you know, I was starting to develop some resentments with that, you know, and I shared with a couple of people. And finally, one night, it had gotten so tough that I walked from GW down to Foggy Bottom to an NA meeting, and it was an anniversary, and it went pretty well. And after the meeting, I was able to share with some people my frustrations that, you know, this is their mom, too, and I don't feel like they're showing up. The guy told me, he said, man, as long as you do what you got to do, you know, keep the focus on you. And that was just what I needed to hear. You know, it wasn't that I was in charge, I was running anything. I had to be of service. I had to do whatever I felt was necessary for me to do for my mom. And she wanted somebody there all night, so I stayed all night as much as I could, and I had to take the focus off my brother and my sister. You know, they loved it just as much as I did. We just had different ways of showing it. And I was a black sheep of the family. Maybe I owed more. You know what I'm saying? Because none of them drank a drug. You know, I was the terror. I was the one who come home drunk and fall down, stumble through the house and tear up stuff and wreck cars and, you know, pretty much disgrace the family. I was an addict who, you remember way back in the 70s when people would go streaking? I went streaking one time, and it was crazy. And I had done some acid and went streaking at a party. And I was just a fool, you know. And, you know, that was the kind of chaos and confusion that I brought to my family. So I guess I needed to be of service, both at home and in this fellowship. But anyway, like I say, my mom got through that surgery and everything went well. And she's doing much better today. And I'm so much better with the part I played in it. You know, I had to do what I had to do for me. And like I say, being an addict and all the confusion and conflict and embarrassment that I know I brought to my family, maybe that's why I was there longer and I stayed longer and I tried to do more because I caused more harm. I'm also an addict who was fortunate enough to build my own home along with a couple other co-workers. And as soon as I got done, my dad had passed shortly before I finished my house. And my parents' home was falling down, and Mom said, "Boy, I didn't know you knew how to do that kind of work." He said, "Maybe you can do something with this old house over here." So I spent another 13 months rebuilding my mom's house, you know, tore the roof off and all new plumbing and electric and made everything new. You know, that's me being of service, and I owed that, you know. And I remember telling a friend of mine, I said, "You know, my brother came over one time to help put some trash in a dumpster." You know, we had one of them big old green dumpsters out in the yard. You know, we were throwing out stuff from up in the attic and stuff. And again, it wasn't about him. It was about me. I was the one who owed the amends, who owed the debt, you know. I terrorized the family. They didn't, you know. I thought my brother was the biggest square. He wouldn't smoke reefer. He wouldn't get drunk. My sister maybe had a couple sips of wine a few times. I've never even seen her drink a beer or any liquor. And, you know, I was the one. I was the crazy one. So I guess I had to, you know, be of more service. But the other area that I saw service kind of at home working my life is my kids. And, you know, I have a real good relationship with my kids today. I have a 28-year-old daughter and a 25-year-old son. And they respect my opinion today. And it's because of this program and you people. You know, y'all taught me how to live and how to be consistent and how to be an example today, you know. Those kids asked my opinion today without me having to force it on them. My son was looking to purchase a car, and he said, "Dad, I want you to go look at this car with me. I need another set of eyes." You know, he asked me. You know, I didn't ask him, said, "Boy, let me go look at this thing," which he asked me. And that meant a lot. My daughter and I are real, real close. She's the same girl who I had to put out of my house at 6 months pregnant because she refused to work. She wanted to wipe her feet on her dad in recovery. And I shared, and I came to meetings and cried and shared about how this girl was hurting me, and she refused to work. I got in her two or three jobs. And finally, the guy who, the main speaker talked about, Bill T., I talked to him about it. He's passed on, and he told me, he said, "Cornell, you don't have to be a doormat today." He said, "Looks like you're going to have to make a tough decision." And I shared with him what was going on. I said, "Man, I'm going to have to ask her to leave my house." And I was able to do that with the help of the God of my understanding and people in my network. I was able to make a stand and stand for something. And I told her, I said, "Baby, I understand that you want something for nothing in life." And I understand that today. I said, "But what you need to understand is that you can't get that from Daddy. So when I get home from work today, your stuff needs to be gone. You need to be out of here." And I said, "You got till the weekend to get the rest of your stuff. And you can keep the key because the locks will be changed." I said, "But whatever's not gone will be at the county dump this weekend." And that tore us apart. You know, and it was one of the toughest decisions I had to make. I think the only Other thing that could relate to that decision was when I cut the last deal with the warden, as I call it, who's really my ex-wife. And I thank God for her today, because I had cut the last deal with her that if I use again, I had to tell the kids that I smoke crack. And of course, I used again, and I had to tell them, and she held me to that, you know. And of course, I cried when I told them, you know, that, and then, you know, of course, I also agreed to go into treatment. And, but that decision with my daughter was one of the toughest, and we're close today. She loves her dad today, you know, and I love her, and we respect each other. And she understands that she can't get something for nothing, not from dad, you know. I'll do anything to help her if she's trying. But I also have a wonderful grandson who's 7 years old. He hasn't seen this addict use. He thinks the world of his grandfather, and I love him to death. And he tells me, he said, "Pop, I love you." You know, he wrapped me around his finger. He used me up. And I love him to death. But he can get his way with Pop. You know, and it's just such a good feeling. You know, that's one of the things this program has given me that money couldn't buy. You know, someone who loves me unconditionally, you know. He thinks I'm the whole world, you know, and I try to be that with him too, you know. But I'm only able to do that through learning from this program on how to stay clean and how to be a parent and how to be a grandparent and most of all how to be consistent, you know. Kids need consistency in their life. I think everybody needs consistency in their life, but especially kids. And addicts need it too. You know, we need to come in here and see these people still staying clean, you know. If you got 30 days clean, somebody with 60 days clean, that's, you know, that's quite a feat that somebody would only have 30 days clean, you know. You know, if you only got one day clean, and now it's people with 20 and 30 years clean in this program. It's amazing. And someone with 24 hours, is just their clean time is just as important as someone with 24 years. Whoever got up the earliest this morning got the most clean time, because it's a day-at-a-time program. And that service thing is a big hit. I took meetings into the county jail for 7 years. I didn't realize it was 7 years that I did that. And the county had a big ceremony thanking the volunteers in the county for their dedication to the county jail. And I got an award, and I was amazed. They had a banquet, and, you know, I was the one who, whenever I seen a blue light, I was like, oh, Lord, you know, kicking beer cans and bottles and trying to remember if I had dope in this pocket. You know, I was scrambling when those type of things came up. And after being involved in service and learning how to be consistent and do something for other people with no strings attached, it's changed my life, you know. One of my favorite things to do is I go to 7-Eleven pretty much every morning to get coffee. I got a 7-Eleven cup sitting there now, and I love buying a complete stranger a cup of coffee. With no strings attached. Most of the time, I won't even tell them I bought it. I'll tell the lady, I said, take out for another 12 ounce. I said, but don't tell them who bought it. And I go sit in the parking lot. And a lot of times, I like doing it for somebody, you know, if I know or I've seen around. But a lot of times, I like doing it for a complete stranger, especially somebody that appears to be having a bad day. Wow. And then, you know, that's one of the things that I do with service. I call it service. I'll buy a stranger who's having a tough day a cup of coffee and sit out in the parking lot and watch them come out that door smiling. They don't even know who bought it. And I don't need them to know. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm doing it with no strings attached. I don't want them to feel like, well, the next time they see me, they got to buy me a cup. You know, a dollar can change somebody's life and change somebody's whole day. That person could have been on the way to work to go postal. But because somebody bought them a cup of coffee and changed their attitude, hopefully they had a successful day. You know, life has been so much better since I've been involved with NA that I can't ever give back as much as been given to me. You know, like I say, I was fortunate enough to be able to build my own home, and I was the kind of addict who couldn't build up enough ashes to put on a can. I would just hit it and it'd roll right straight through. I wouldn't even get a decent hit. You know, I couldn't build anything, but this program has showed me that the answers are here, you know, the whole world. I was out fishing with a recovering addict, oh, probably 13, 14 years ago, and it just came to me that, you know, there's only two things in life they say we can't do, and that's drink a drug, and the rest of the world is out. You know, you can have a castle or a hut, you know, where you want to go with it. And it starts with service, though, you know, and I've had folks do a lot of things for me, especially early on in recovery. People come and pick you up, take you to meetings. I had a sponsor who shared with me how this thing works, helped me with some of the steps. And this thing is laid out before us. You know, it's proven that if we do the way it's written, we can stay clean a day at a time. And I don't know. Service at home is just like I hear people in the meetings say, if you want to get involved in service, at help put up some of these chairs when the meeting's over. Or, you know, clean the coffee pot out. You know, if you see a spill, get it up, you know. But those things apply at home, too, you know. Don't go home and complain that your wife ain't do the dishes. If you don't like the dirty dishes, wash the dishes, you know. I have people in my life today that are able to do those things that I wasn't able to do, you know. People that will come home and cook a meal for the family. Or they'll vacuum and clean the house. And not just yard work, you know, so I'm talking about the men there, not just yard work. Do some things inside the house, too. You don't sleep out in the yard. You know, I heard a guy say, you know, I do the outside. You do, no. If you sleep outside, you can just do the outside. The inside of the house is part of our job, too. And I got a buddy of mine said, damn, man, I can tell when you ain't dating nobody, you be slumming. He said, your house be a wreck. He said, you must have met somebody new, the house all clean. So, you know, I'm a human being as well, you know, so I'm a creature of habit. And sometimes I be slumming, you know, I ain't going to lie about it. The service work that I need to do for myself be slacking, you know. And if I want to feel better about me, I need to take better care of me. I shared with a friend of mine that I used to date that life was born, and she told me, she said, Cornell, life's not born. She said, you're born. She said, if you think life is born, you need to get out and do something. You know, don't just sit back and complain, you know. But I've been real blessed and fortunate. I was in a bad motorcycle wreck back May the 15th of last year. I had a blood clot on my brain, broke my wrist, a lot of pins and screws in there. It looks like the x-ray looks like drywall screws. I got about 10 or 12 of them in this wrist. And I'm fortunate enough to have another chance at life. You know, just like NA gave me another chance. And friends of mine tell me, that Cornell, God ain't done with you yet. You got some more work to do. And it's service work, you know. I go to the nursing home and visit folks that are sick. I was sharing with a friend of mine. I said, man, I just went past and dropped off a newspaper to a guy who's in a nursing home that I know. You know, we should go to racetrack together. And, man, it meant the world to him. He said, oh, man, a paper, 50 cents for a Washington Post. Just made that guy's day, you know. I'd heard he was there. And I said, man, I can stop and check on him. I'm on disability right now. I don't have to go to work. So I can be of service to other folks, you know. And it just feels good, though, to do something for somebody with no strings attached, you know. That's a strange concept to an addict, though. You know, when we was out there using, I'm going to do something for you, but you got to do something for me. Okay. You know, everybody trying to get something. So I don't know. My life's just gotten so much better since I've been able to work some of these steps and use some of these tools in my life. And sometimes I use them without even know I'm using them. You know, I starting to live this program. You know, I don't know when it really exactly happened, but at some point it happened in my life. And sometimes, like I heard somebody else share earlier, was that I may not be able to see my life, but I can see things in yours. But then I have a network of folks, of people who really know me, and they can see things in my life. And sometimes I need to be told that, man, you be in a service today. He said, that was a good deed you done. You know, because sometimes I don't see it. I just do it instinctively, you know. I'm just going to reach out to folks. I'm the type of person that'll help you. I ain't trying to hurt nobody, you know. I got a friend of mine who's not in the program who just recently retired. We worked together for about 25 years. I guess I'm telling my age now. But he said, man, if you can't get along with Cornell, you probably can't get along with nobody. He said, something's probably wrong with you. And that means a lot to me coming from someone who worked with me for that long and knows me and has been around me. So it must be a little something to it, you know. But I've always shared with people, I can't understand why people want to take something from somebody or somebody trying to take advantage of somebody. Not that I'm perfect or that I'm a saint, you know, I'm human, I've failed, I've made some mistakes, I've done some crazy things, but I honestly try today to help people, you know, and especially with no strings attached, because it just seems to be my nature. It's who I wanted to be all along. You know, I started using because I didn't like the way I was feeling. I didn't like who I was. And this program has truly changed me, and I like to change, you know. I think I have something to offer today. And I also have been seeking outside help since my accident. I also lost my sense of smell. So I get paranoid occasionally, thinking that if the house catch on fire, I can't smell smoke. I'll burn up in the house. And this Thursday, I don't know if you all were listening to the news in Charles County, Maryland, Newburgh, this guy burned up in the house. Kids jumped out of the upstairs window. That was one of my neighbors, about 4 miles from my house. The guy, he was in a wheelchair, and he told his wife to get the kids out. You know, he pretty much gave his life so they could live. She got burnt really bad. And it brings up the paranoia for me sometimes, you know. I may have a pizza in the oven. I go back and do something on a computer. And I remember like about a week ago, I was walking out. I said, damn, it's kind of foggy in the kitchen. It was smoke. But I can't smell it. So I'm sort of handicapped in that area. I'm disadvantaged, but I'm learning how to deal with it. And surface work is doing just that, seeking outside help if you need it, you know. I used to be ashamed of telling somebody that I'm going to therapy or I'm doing this or I'm doing that. And I've learned also after being in this program, there's nothing to be ashamed about if you need some outside help. What you should be ashamed about is needing help and not seeking it. Okay, that's the real hit. Ain't nothing wrong with getting some outside help if that's what you need. And there's plenty of help in this room that's free, but sometimes we need to be able to keep an open mind and be willing to accept the help that people are willing to give you. Folks have really been a blessing in my life, and I just try and give back at every opportunity I can. I hope maybe I've shared something that touched somebody's life or somebody maybe can relate to. And thanks for letting me share. I'll keep coming back.
Hi, everybody. My name's Bill, and I'm an addict. And I'm also a nervous addict. They asked me to do this thing, and I was like, why me? I want to thank Cornell. He did a great job. I am one of those people. I just celebrated 20 years last Sunday. Thank you. And I felt real humble at my anniversary. I had flashbacks all day, and I was trying to figure out, you know, what I did to deserve 20 years clean. And it was a lot of hard work. You know, Cornell mentioned a lot of good things. I am a contractor, and that's what I do for a living. I build houses. And as a matter of fact, I met a young lady here today because I'm working in merchandise. And I've been over, and I'm tired. I've been there since yesterday, and I'm working on a little sleep tonight. And service work at home, to me, I was like, what do I do? And I build houses, and I actually met a girl that's in this program today that came up to me, and I didn't know who she was, and I couldn't recognize her, and I built a house and sold it to her last year. And she didn't know that I knew she was in the program. I kind of didn't blow her anonymity, but I didn't really like her father. And we were sitting at the settlement table, but I knew she was a recovering addict. So I just kept my cool and went through the settlement and sold her the house. And it's part of the blessings. You know, when you come around here, I was desperate. I didn't have anything. You know, I was living out of a bag. I was a contractor at first, and I was living with my wife. I should say, I call my wife now. We were living in a Section 8 townhouse, and I had bags of clothes, and that's all I had. But I did have the ability and the willingness to do anything you people told me to do. And they told me the biggest thing for me to do was get involved in service. Now, they told me to be a coffee maker. They told me, you know, in general, to do whatever I could to stay out of my own way. 90 meetings in 90 days was a good topic for me because I was there every day. I was scared of everybody else and everywhere I went because I knew that I was going to use if I went around these people. You know, I used to tell people I smoked a sensible drug. I smoked PCP, and I used to tell people that's a sensible drug. You know, 10 dippers a day was a normal thing, and they're saying, I tell people, they say, well, I smoke crack and I do heroin. I said, why wouldn't you just do a sensible drug like PCP? And, you know, they would all shake their heads and laugh, but the more I learned about service was, what it taught me was the we thing. This program has allowed me I'm trying to figure out what to say here about my parents. My parents are both disabled, and they live with me, and it wasn't because that, you know, I had a choice or that I, you know, was this great guy that took on this responsibility. My little brother's been living with him up until he's 28 years old. I'm 48, and I'm 13 years older than my brother. I have 4 kids, 5 grandchildren. And my brother said, I'm never going to get married. I'm living in mom and dad's basement. No girl wants to marry me. And I, you know, I said, look, I'll step up, and I have 2 sisters. They went, shot the other way, said, I don't want no parts of this. And my father has emphysema. My mother has a lot of medical problems. So what I did was build a house, and like you were just talking about, and I built an addition on. And my dad and I really aren't speaking right now. He's pretty pissed off at me, and so is my mother. And they think N.A. has brainwashed me. And I was trying to explain to them that N.A., if it wasn't for you people in this program, I wouldn't be there for them. I said, there wouldn't be a house. There wouldn't be any money to pay the bills. You wouldn't have food. You wouldn't have insurance. You wouldn't have that nice truck you drive. And I'm a contractor, and I have a full plate. Like I said, I have 4 kids, 5 grandchildren. My grandson, who's 13 years old, plays hockey. And believe me, I'm heavily into that. I support every grandchild that I have. And sometimes my children get offended because you have to separate this program from your personal life. That's what they tell you. It's called getting a balance. You have to live and breathe N.A. in order to get a life. And it took me a long time to realize that. But all the service work I do, I've been to jails, institutions. This is my 3rd convention that I've done. But when you look at everything that you do in your life, it's really not about you. It's about everybody else. It's about what I can do for you. And when I lost that focus this year, my parents were trying to make themselves a priority and N.A. not a priority. So I would swing that focus over and say, you know, they wanted all the attention. And I started to realize that I was suffering myself because Bill wasn't going to meetings. Bill wasn't feeding his own disease. Because if I don't take care of me, nothing else matters anymore. Because it'll all blow up. It'll all end. I need my daily dose of medicine. You know, my sponsor's sitting in the front row right now. He brought me a book today, the 20th. It's a special edition, the 20th anniversary of Narcotics Anonymous when the book was written. Now, he gave it to me. It just happens it was written 20 years ago, and I'm getting it on my 20th anniversary. It meant a whole lot to me. But what he's taught me is the service to others, not just at home, just when Cornell was mentioned going to jails and doing a part of yourself. When you give to somebody else unconditionally, like he was talking about that cup of coffee, I really like that because, see, I've done that in the past. I've paid for people. You know, I'm very blessed at what I do. I'm a contractor. I build houses, and I live very comfortably. I have my son, when I came here, you were talking about your son, and I was really intrigued with that because, see, I have four children, like I stated, and two I get along with great, and two I don't get along with great. My son and I, last Thursday, got in an argument. Last Monday, it escalated into just about a fist fight. I'm a businessman, and I'm trying to teach my son how to be a businessman, and he likes tattoos. And I said, look, he says, you got them? I said, yeah, but the rule is nothing below the sleeve and nothing on, you know, above the neck. And he came in, and I almost flipped out because he asked me prior about getting tattoos. I said, don't go here and up. I said, you're unmarketable to me. He said, what the hell does that mean? Unmarketable. I said, I can't put you in somebody's house. I can't let you sell. I can't let you be in charge of somebody. He came in with a devil on the side of his neck and an angel on the other side. And you can imagine, I'm his father. And, you know, I'm trying to hold it all together in my own office. And I'm talking to him reasonably. And he got real smart with me. Then stood up in front of all my people, challenged me. And the only thing I didn't do was I didn't hit him. I wanted to really bad. But as this program works, somebody else happened to be in the program, happened to watch my reactions as it was escalating. And as he stepped forward and challenged my manhood and he was telling everybody how he was going to kick my you know what, I said, ho, it's got to stop here. These people stepped in and said, I've seen enough. Your father tries to do as much as he can for everybody. And so you can only spread yourself so thin in this program. And I realized that my personal life, my kids, my parents, everything around me is like taking a priority to what I really need to do, which is focus on myself. Right. And when I went home and told my wife, I said, my parents aren't talking to me. My son isn't talking to me. And she said, well, how do you feel? I said, actually, I feel pretty good. I said, because I don't have to answer anybody right now because nobody's really requesting my services. I said, which is kind of freeing me up. I said, I'm working on the merchandise committee, and I was the chairperson, and I stepped down. Let me tell you, everybody thought I was really weak, and they said, Bill, you know, you took this commitment. You really have to stay with it. It's a service commitment. I said, let me explain something to you. My plate is full. I really don't need to be the person in charge. Just point me in a direction, and I'll do anything you want. I said, I'll be your worker. And the chairperson who stepped up, I said, you take all the heat, and I'll be the guy behind the scenes. You tell me what you want. And that's what I've done for the last year. All this, everybody had questioned some of the stuff we had in the merchandise room. And I'll tell you right now that my wife and I went through every piece that you all see. We went through hours and hours and hours every night. Sometimes I would get home 9 to 11 o'clock at night, be up the next morning, you know, and go to work. And I got to run my office. Sometimes my office, nothing happened. Sometimes this convention took over my office. And the girls that work for me said, what am I doing? I said, go to my email and get this and go here and do that. And they said, why? I said, because you have to. I said, this is who I am. And the one girl that's been working for me for 10 years, she totally understood. She's on board. She doesn't know anything about the program, but she knows everything that I do in the program is a result of her job and her paycheck. So when we all sat down and we talked about how I was going to handle this convention, I told him it was going to be very time-consuming. And the bottom line is, when I talked to my wife and I accepted to do this, and my sponsor and I talked about it too, that, you know, I said, this is the last time that I can do this. And then the first thing I said when the next year's chair came up to me, I said, look, you need any help, give me a call. It came right out of my mouth, you know, after all this. What I was told was you have to give it away to keep it. I mean, Cornell just about touched on everything, and I don't want to sit up here and blab all night. I know what I do. I know what I have to do for me. I know what you have to do with other people. When it comes to your family, you can only go so far. When they say service at home, you can only do so much, because as soon as you cut into your own self, you start losing respect for yourself. You start losing all the dignity, and anything that you've ever built in this program will start going by the wayside because other people start renting space in your head, and you don't understand why. You're saying, why do I feel like this? And then my wife who's got 21 years clean would say, why are you allowing these people to let you feel like this? You know, you need to start working your own program. You need to start being your own person. And it's hard. It's hard because if you've been clean for a long period of time and you spend all this time, like Cornell said, doing all this damage, because believe me, my father lives with me, and I can't figure it out myself because I was definitely the black sheep. I was the guy that went to jail. I was the one they chased around. I was the one the old man threw out. I was the one that smoked PCP and did a tap dance on his coffee table. And, you know, my father was scared of nobody, but my mother said it's the first time she ever seemed scared of anybody when I was tap dancing on his coffee table telling him I was going to do it. I was going to do it, you know, and he's like looking up at me like, man, I could hit him with a bat. He ain't coming off of there. And, but he didn't talk to me for 2 years. My dad didn't. And then I was so tired of being, sick and tired of being who I was, that I went to my parents, and my father threw me out and asked him for help, and he threw me out. And my mother gave my father an ultimatum. Either you take that boy to rehab, or you're going out the door with him. And I felt like I owed my parents. You know, after that, I figured I owe somebody something. And I came to the conclusion that after 20 years, I don't owe anybody anymore. I don't owe anybody. When I do something, it's out of the kindness, out of my heart. It's what you people have taught me to do. And if it's the right thing, I do it. If it's not the right thing and I don't feel comfortable, I'm not going to do it anymore. I'm not putting myself out. That's it. No guilt. I mean, the way my life is today, it's very good. But without this program, I'm not going to have any of this. I'm not going to be – I mean, I feel real honored to stand here and chair this meeting. You know, it's easy to chair a meeting when you're sitting in your home group and you know all your people and everything else, but when you come up and stand at a podium, I'm not your kind of guy, believe it or not, that wants to sit up here and talk in front of a huge audience. I'm the kind of guy that wants to stay in the background, just nobody notices. You know, that guy's over there, he does this. Even at my office, when we build things, I get letters from guys, and the customer said, I want to thank you. I said, if you feel so strongly about what we built for you or how nice it is, write a letter about the guys that did it. And in my office, if you walk in there, there's letters all around the office. And it just says, Dear Bill, thank you for your guys' service, and thank you for the great work. And what I've been taught by NA is that I treat people like I want to be treated, and that's how I want to live my life. That's how, no matter what color you are, what you do, it doesn't make a difference. If you want somebody to treat you like somebody, you have to treat that person like just like you want to be treated. And like I say, my sponsor, he's cut and dry with me. And like I said, I'm real nervous up here, and I'm trying to just to be honest with everybody. I'm tired. It's been a long day. When I sit in that merchandise room, and I see the look on people's faces, and they're buzzing around there, and then somebody will come up and say, you know what? You don't have this, and you don't have this, and you don't do this. And I'm like, you know what? You too could be on that committee next year. Or you know, you want all this input. I said, you can go over here, and you can go say, you know what? I'm going to do this because if I knew it all, I'd have it all. I said, but what I do know is we did the best we could. And like those calendars that are over there, my sponsor thought of the idea, and we all put it together. And it took a lot of work to make a calendar. I was totally impressed with how much goes into, you know, people look at a calendar and think there's a calendar up on the wall. And you look at the days and all those pictures were taken, those shadow boxes were taken out of context. They were put inside. We unwrapped them, we wrapped them, we put them together. We had to go photograph proof after proof. Then we had to put something beneath it. We had to put something beside it. You had to change all the text. I'm like, man, this is like a real job. But it's, you know, it's part of services. This is getting ridiculous. But you know what? This calendar's turned out beautiful, and I'm proud of them. I'm proud of all the work that everybody in that committee has done. This whole convention, if you look around, and I was talking to people earlier, this convention is almost sold out. I mean, that's an incredible thing. It is almost sold out. Every event, there's only 500 registrations, and it's not even Saturday. I mean, they've done records in the merchandise room. And we're running out of stuff over there. And I'm hoping that we're all sold out by tomorrow. So Bill's service job is up here. I mean, you know, and I'm being perfectly honest. When we go in there and we wrap up, that we want to be the best that we can be. And we wanted you guys to be proud of what we put out. And with that, I'm going to shut up because I appreciate the opportunity to be here, and thank everybody for letting me help me stay clean.